coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. All right, so I'm going to do this off the top just to give you an idea of what we're doing, okay? Cole, you know your part, right?
For this and the next episode as well.
Well, yeah, next issue. We're doubling up here. This is going to be a bit of a...
This is a part. Bigger crossover event than, like, Sanford and Son and Hawaii Five-0.
Did that happen?
That did happen.
No, it did not happen. Did it really happen?
God's truth, that happened.
Can we do an entire show on that?
I wish.
That's the show I want to do. All right, here we go.
That's USG.
All right. In the comic book justice system, there are people that represent two separately but completely ineffective groups. The police, who investigate crime, and the district attorneys, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. Thank you. See, I knew you'd get your part. We didn't even rehearse that.
I didn't know. That was, like, completely ready.
I am going to drop...
So I was telling Larry that, you know, he really ought to leave Susan. Because she's just completely wrong for him. And, I mean, I know it's not my place, but, you know, he is a cousin, and I want what's best for the family.
Well, yeah, you know, you got it. Sometimes it's tough to hear it. Oh!
Oh, my God, it's Robin!
Oh, there's a crowbar laying next to Robin.
Someone beat Robin to death with a crowbar!
Oh!
Dum-dum.
I'm going to get the dung-dung sound effect, and I'm going to drop it into the show periodically. I thought about just doing it when I mentioned Detective Chimp. So whenever I would say Detective Chimp, it would go, dung-dung. But yeah, no, okay, so two issues. Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, Law
two
and Order.
But equally important issues.
Two separate but equally important comic issues of Hey Kids Comics. no, Cole had a great idea for an issue on the judicial system in comics. And you've had that idea, what, for a while now?
It's been around for a little while. I wanted to explore the top trials, mainly in comics, some of the court cases that were a big deal.
Sure.
And then that naturally, as is so often the case with this show, is not enough.
It's never enough. We're gluttons for punishment. You know that. So, yeah, for some reason it became a Law and Order two-parter. The first part being the police who investigate ineffectively the crimes, and the second part, the judicial system, the district, I like district attorneys that prosecute ineffectively. But what's, so we talked about what, oh God, I don't know, not too long ago, 6 or 7 issues ago, how the idea of a reporter was the, like, this real pervasive, oh, I think we talked about it during Ditko.
Yeah.
It's this pervasive profession in comic where, you know, there are a lot of reporters out there, and we figured out why. It's because, you know, A, lazy writing, B, because it was a very, very important job back in that time period before, you know, everything was partisan. You literally Cronkite-ed it. You read the news into the camera. So they were the truth tellers. And C, it puts you real close to the crime.
Absolutely. And I think also it's the easiest way to have a profession that is simultaneously, especially in its day, the everyman.
Sure, sure.
The reporter is, in a time when journalism was the trusted resource for the most part, it was a workable way of bringing you to street level in the midst of all of this.
Yeah, the chaos. It cut through the chaos. And I think that the two professions, or, you know, the idea of the professions of the two that we're going to talk about in these episodes are just as prolific as the reporter, and that's, you know, people who work in the legal crime fighting arena and the people who work in the judicial system in one way or another that also are either superheroes as well or work alongside, in giant air quotes,
yeah,
the superhero supervillain communities. It was interesting to me. I liked getting into this and actually looking at it and seeing it. I forgot about, okay, never mind, sorry. As so often happens, when we are doing research and doing things like that, I forgot that there was, we were talking off mic, that DC has, it's very, okay, so let's start here. When it comes to police forces, I think DC made a very wise decision, we've talked about this before, by introducing imaginary cities and places.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden, it's really hard to have a New York City police force as a character in Marvel Comics. And make it and create a mythos around it. Because it already exists. You can have a Gotham City police force, and you can have a Commissioner Gordon and a Montoya and a Crispin and a Bullock.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to do when it's Poughkeepsie's police force. But Marvel did have one. Do you remember Code Blue?
Oh, my God. I don't, but I do.
Yeah. So Code Blue... do you remember what Code Blue came from? Where Code Blue was introduced?
Good night. No.
Sing your favorite Thor song and you'll remember.
Of course it would be.
It was in Thunderstruck.
Because he used to be Thor, but now he's not.
Thunderstrike.
Thunderstrike.
But yeah, it was in Thunderstrike that Code Blue was introduced, and I remember that. So they, and then they got their own book, basically, like a mini series or something to that effect, where they were the police, you know, the SWAT team, the supervillain Batlin SWAT team. But yeah, so why are police important in the world of superheroes? Are they effective, Cole? What is it? Police are important, obviously, but why?
And I think, again, in many ways, the police ground the story. It brings this, it's gods and man.
Okay.
Is what it is. It is your Perseus or your, Perseus is the only damn one I can think of right now. But if you take it to the classical, and this is for you, Kelly Long, if you take this to the classical, then you begin to see that to draw an audience closer to the gods, you need man. You need the hero. You need your Achilles or your, you know, even a demigod like Heracles at least has some connection,
right,
to mankind. And you need that connection, that conduit through which you can interact with the gods like Batman and Superman.
Yes.
And granted, a lot of your big hitters were kind of late to the party. Or on the other side of the coin, you have characters who started out in the police.
Right.
And then, you know, Sting got all full of himself, so they broke up.
Yes, well played. I like that joke. But yeah, if you look at Nightwing, Dick Grayson, detective, has to be the youngest detective ever in the history of detectives.
Yeah,
he had to have passed the exam at like 14. Like, yeah, sure, you can be a police detective. You know, you do have a lot of, and then you have the rare police that started and ended as superhero police, a la, yeah, Savage Dragon.
Oh, yes, of course.
Can't forget Savage Dragon. But I guess my thing is, you know, superhero, we don't often get the story of the police solving the crime. We get the story of the superhero solving the crime. We get the story of Batman breaking up the you know, and we don't see a lot of Batman breaking up the drug rings or anything like that anymore. We see the stories of like Batman breaking up the Bible, what was it, the crime Bible, half hybrid animal people, and then, you know, but Spider-Man we still see a lot of times, you know, him take out some muggers or something like that, and then the police show up and collect the
yeah,
vitreous.
In many ways that's one of the really bothersome aspects of comic book vigilantism is the, you know, front porch delivery.
Yes.
You know, the cops are walking down the front steps of the massive edifice that's the local precinct for reasons, you know, for some reason the local cops are stationed in a Doric temple, and they're coming down the steps and nobody's up. You know, it's major city. And there's like two beat cops. Oh, what do you say, O'Shaughnessy? Let's go get us a donut. And then all of a sudden here at the foot of the steps is two guys, you know, with a 3-day growth of beard and domino masks all webbed together. And a little note. That's like, oh, you know, let's talk about two people who are different than the one person who brought us these criminals. That's you and me, O'Shaughnessy. We're the ones doing all the damn paperwork. You don't see Spider-Man doing any paperwork on this, do you?
But my other problem is knowing the, even my amateur knowledge of the law and law enforcement, I know that you have to gather evidence and you have to get eyewitness statements.
You can't get, you know, Spider-Man's word that these guys were breaking into, you know, there's no jurisprudence, there's no due process.
So, in other words, all of Spider-Man's time, because of habeas corpus, all of Spider-Man's time would be spent in a courtroom in front of a judge saying, yes, I captured these two guys, yes, this is what happened, yes, this is my statement.
Like, Spider-Man, do you see the perpetrators in this courtroom today?
Like, I don't know, put domino masks on them.
And of course, when he's pointing at them in the at the defendant's table, his fingers, as he makes the traditional pointing gesture, strike the spider web mechanism and spray sticky spider goop all over the courtroom.
Oh, that's contempt of court right there.
That's right.
Sticky spider goop.
Sticky spider goop. You heard it here first, folks. You know, this is a worse travesty, a worse farce of the judicial system than, you know, you can drop the vernacular. It's a doiby.
All I'm saying is, What role do the police play in a world in which you have a Batman and a Superman and a Flash and a Green Lantern or the Avengers or whatever it might be?
Like, well, I think it was that very question is at the heart of one of the most brilliant and subtle explorations of that very conundrum.
Okay, what's that?
And you know it's going to go there eventually, and here, because it's twofold. Because one of the things we have talked a bit about or touched on, and we will be talking about, is police come superhero.
Sure.
Police officer. And in this case, simultaneously, this particular work also explores to a large degree, it's part of the underlying plot, what, you know, what place do the police have in superhero world? And that is, of course, you know it's going to go there. Every third to fifth episode does.
It's got to.
Yeah, is Watchmen.
I'm
with
surprised
the
you've really shown a lot of
considerable restraint
in
yes.
the last, like, 10 issues.
I'm making it up for it here, baby.
All right, bring it. Bring it
because
on country roads.
The Keen Act is Moore's exploring that very question. The police aren't just going to sit by and become the, you know, the perfunctory clericals.
Right.
For the superhero community.
The data entry team.
And the, you know, the police strike in New York City leads to the Keene Act, which, interestingly enough, is actually named for Bob Keene of the Family Circus.
Really?
Yeah, he was really concerned about this very question. Did not have a venue in his own work to explore it, and reached out to Alan Moore.
I don't believe that. Is that true?
I doubt very seriously.
You're such an asshole. But, I'm taking you to court.
But as you will find out in the next issue, I'm not under oath.
You're a dickhead. I'm going to put you under oath. 6 feet under oath.
You
son of a bitch. I'm bringing Angelo back in.
Angelo's coming back. But, you know, the idea that a police strike would be almost inevitable after a while, especially in a world that has, you know, 750 superheroes per borough.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct. And that's,
you know, a beat cop can't walk his route without tripping over a cape.
Because I guess what you have to have a costumed superhero that respects law and order. And I think the problem is that the whole idea of a costumed superhero is that they do not respect law and order at all.
Well, and then it gets worse when law and order is complicit in that. And our public enemy number one in this particular context is none other than one James Gordon.
Oh, yeah, he's, yeah.
Massive abuse of power.
Sure, absolutely.
And as I say, he's turning a blind eye to rampant vigilantism.
That's almost as bad as the other side, isn't it? Like it's equally as corrupt what Jim Gordon does as what if Jim Gordon was in league with the Joker or with Marconi, or, you know, it would be equally as corrupt one way or the other.
Yeah.
Oh man, no, you're absolutely right. But okay, since we're on the topic of Jim Gordon, I think that was over time, over the last God knows how long, like 70 years almost. I think we've gotten the most fleshed out exploration of what a police force looks like in a comic book world in the form of the Gotham City Police Department. We've gotten Jim Gordon and almost a full story arc, you know, a full fleshing out of character from beat cop to commissioner. We also get his partner, Jim Bullock. I don't think ever better portrayed as a Jim Bullock than in this show Gotham. That was the part that sucked Cole and I in the most, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
just Harvey Bullock being just.
And the thing about it is, when Burton's Batman comes out,
right,
before he's named, William Hootkin's character, Porkins from Star Wars, no less.
Was that the same guy?
Same guy.
Son of a bitch! I'm learning all kinds of stuff today. Are you lying to me about this one?
No, you've been Martha.
I literally was just totally Martha. Yes, you are correct.
Just Martha.
God, yes, it is. Shit, I'm seeing it in my head now.
Before he's named, you know, out loud as Knox, I thought that was supposed to be Bullock. And then, of course, you realize, no, they couldn't do Bullock portray Bullock in that way.
Right. That's amazing. That's so cool. And then you've got characters that become important in the Gotham City Police Department, like the introduction of Renee Montoya. Now, keep in mind, there was a comic called Gotham Central. Central was a fantastic comic book. It was a comic book written by crime writers Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka. If you're going to pick two guys to write a crime comic book, you're going to pick Brubaker and Rucka. Those guys can write the shit out of a comic book, especially a crime-related kind of. We need a better word for, I guess, procedural comic book. I don't want to call it a slice of life because that's a different.
No, that's not what we're trying to do there.
Right. But, you know, you get characters like Renee Montoya, who later becomes the Question. You get characters like Crispus Allen, who later becomes the Spectre. And as we're talking about cops, let us not forget that the Spectre was a cop.
Oh, that's right. Jim Corrigan.
Yeah, was a
ex,
cop.
Ex-cop, ex-breathing person.
Now spirit of vengeance.
Yeah.
Biblical spirit of vengeance. Sure, sure.
Is that vengeance in a biblical sense?
It's did you bring proof of vengeance? but the problem is this comic didn't really sell well.
Yeah.
So it went through about 40 issues, which is what, 3 years of comics?
It's not bad, long. Almost 4 years.
Yeah, but it didn't sell well, and it didn't sell well because it's a comic book about a police force. In a world where you can buy a comic book about Batman, my question, Cole, is how do we sell police comics?
I think the difficulty with selling a police, especially a police procedural, is that it can become a bit dull. Or, you know, I think one of the ways that I personally saw a police book, and I think this was around the time of Gotham Central, it may have even predated it a bit, in my comic book writer ambition days,
yes,
I conceived of a book called Black and White.
Okay.
But it told tales of, it was more of an anthology in that it would do, my vision was individual stories or story arcs that moved around to different police forces and just sort of explored what is it like to be a cop in a world with the superhero pantheon that my friend Steve and I had created.
Okay.
I had this great big storyline where hundreds of thousands of demon creatures were inadvertently unleashed from a dimensional prison, forcing this, kind of a mystical character I had to kind of reveal himself and come out of the woodwork and help put them all back in, you know, all the genies back in the bottle. And that was one of the places I really wanted to cross that storyline into Black and White. Because, you know, what's it like to, you know, be going and grabbing some breakfast with your partner and you're settling in and all of a sudden, you know, 30 different bizarre, entirely, you know, no two alike creatures are suddenly, you know, wreaking havoc everywhere, and you're having to, you know, put them down, and you don't even know what the hell they are.
But I think that's the part that for me that's the most interesting about this. You know, look how crazy. We always talk about how crazy it must be to live in these worlds, right? Where you're going to your office job in the morning and you don't know whether the wrecking crew is going to rob the 7-Eleven next door, or if Mole Man's going to tunnel a hole through the middle of, you know, the street on your way to work.
Let's take Mole Man, for example.
Let's take Mole Man. Where you want to take
him? Yeah. But, for example, let's say a gas main explodes or, a water main causes a collapse in the sidewalk or something.
Sure.
Amongst those charged with just the day-to-day stuff are, you know, guess what? You know, you and Louie are going to go and direct traffic around this hole in the ground.
Right.
Well, what if that hole in the ground also has this, like, unconscious grizzly gator that's 40 feet tall?
Right. Like, what do you know, do? Like,
the thing just came and gave him a nighty-night punch, and then they haul off to go down into the subterranean realm of the Mole Man. And meanwhile, the cops got to hang around, and you're like, when's this thing going to wake up? You know, I don't want to be in paw range.
In paw range when this paw thing range, comes
yes. When Gophersaurus here comes back to life.
But I think that's what I'm saying is, like, who takes that job?
Yeah.
At that point, like, you're not talking about.
Nathan Fillion's gonna be like, no, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, we're not talking about.
That exhausted my knowledge of the show The Rookie.
You just did a that was a one man off-Broadway performance of the entire season of The Rookie.
That's my one-man show struggling to be topical.
It's good, though. Like, you did a good job. You've been doing a really... I wanted to applaud you. You've been doing a really good job staying topical.
Thank you.
Like, the last five issues, you've really been knocking it out of the park. I'm impressed.
I'm trying to pay more attention to things I don't care about.
That's the story of podcasting, is paying attention to things you don't care about.
Ask anybody.
But no, that's what I'm saying, is like, it's a ridiculous job to take with no payoff. Like, what do you, like because you don't get to solve the big crimes. And if you do, great. You're going to be buried on page 6 of the Daily Planet because Spider-Man broke up the alien ray gun weapons trafficking ring that just went through town. Like, the normal person in a comic book world just, it's shot. Like, it's, you're useless. It just feels that way. I know somebody still has to put parking tickets out there, but...
Yeah, why do we need traffic enforcement in a world where of Quinjets and flying armor and alien invasions?
Yeah.
Where there's like zero job satisfaction in anything anymore.
We're worried about job satisfaction. Like, did you fill out your Applebee survey? Yeah, I did. Also, the ringleader was here. Like, I was waited on by the ringleader, and he didn't give me extra breadsticks. So I'm upset. Like, this is the world that you're forced to live in. And
I'm pretty sure I saw Brother Voodoo at the to-go pickup.
Got my curbside to-go from Brother
Voodoo. Exactly. I'm pretty sure I saw him out there doing curbside. Like, this portal opened. He reached out. He took the bag full of styrofoam boxes, and the portal closed.
Yeah, here's a question for you.
There's serious, baby back ribs going on God knows where in the universe.
Why wouldn't you, if you had superpowers, right, and you lived in a world where superpowers were recognized, there was a registration act, there was a whole fight over that, alien invasions happen every third week, the Red Skull might or might not invade your pool party, all these things are happening. Why wouldn't you, instead of turning to a life of crime where you rob a bank and possibly have to encounter a Spider-Man or a Punisher or, God forbid, a Thor or, a Silver Surfer, why wouldn't you become the fastest pizza delivery guy? Or
go into, if you have some sort of weird, okay, let's just say, for example, this is putting it way into the far-flung future, but, why wouldn't Matter Eater Lad just go into competitive eating?
Right.
He would win Space Nathan's every year.
Space Nathan's? Matter Eater Lad, the Blob. Who else would be competing in space?
I know.
Ego, the Living Planet.
Oh, God. Are there enough hot dogs in the world to sate Ego's appetite? Everybody else except for maybe the denizens of Bismuth have to digest normally. They don't have a molten core to just melt that down instantly. We're talking about digestion on an atomic level.
We are. But you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
here?
Absolutely.
Like, why would you bother going into a life of crime if you were the one in 25, or I guess, let's be fair, one in 1,000, one in 3,000 that develops some sort of superpower and you're telling me that the general world wouldn't be highly sought after?
Yes.
Either to have a reality TV show or fill a particular niche that nobody else, that nobody else can do as well as you. Whether that be like shift work at a factory or, selling tires, whatever your particular power leans to, why would you do that instead of, why don't you do that instead of going to a life of crime and demanding top dollar for what you do? Because you're going to get caught by the guy next to you in that 1 in 1,000.
Exactly.
But there's a few, there's one other one I really wanted to get into without kind of, you know, freestyle episoding it. And that was the idea of a police force in space.
Now, interesting enough, you know, going back to Space Nathans, there was a the police actually, you know, a police force, the science police.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Were a big part of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yes, you were absolutely you were absolutely right.
So, you know, there literally was a space police, and in fact, there was a character who spontaneously changed gender at one point.
In the space police?
In the space police.
Wow. Any more on that? Because I'm not familiar with.
Well, this was back, you know, when Keith Giffen, before he went into his experimental style, a.k.a. lazy,
sure.
The character was, like, one of the hottest comic book characters out there. I mean, she was a babe. And then she turned into a guy, and it's like, okay.
It's like, all right.
Thanks for ruining that fanboy fantasy. I mean, granted, I'd be 2000 by the time she was born, but...
So that's a weird thing.
Put your head around that one.
That's a weird thing, that the Legion of Superheroes has characters that were born in 2000, and it's 2018 now.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a weird thing to consider, isn't it? Let's acknowledge that weirdness. Okay.
Yeah, they're just about the right time now that the Legion of Superheroes should be forming, because most of those crazy kids were around, like, you know, 17, 18 years old.
And that's probably, you're absolutely right, and that's depressing.
yes, indeed.
But also, please do not underestimate what a wet, hot trash fire Earth must be in order to get... So the idea, if you do not know as a comic book fan, of the Green Lantern Corps, is they're an intergalactic space force, and through some weird gerrymandering... involved in these little blue guys, they've carved out sectors of space. And every sector gets a Green Lantern. And that Green Lantern's job is to patrol that sector and stop them space crimes from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's got their own. They go back and report at the station and have their coffee and type up their paperwork and put people in their science cells. And then report it.
And the great thing is, when they're typing their paperwork, they just generate green typewriters.
Yeah, they don't actually type anything.
From their ring, yeah.
They generate a thousand monkeys typing on a thousand.
Thousand green monkeys.
Typing on a thousand
and,
green.
And then the ring analyzes which monkey got closest.
That's right.
It's one of its functions.
That's funny. How bad is Earth that they get... Not one, not two, not three, not four, but six Green Lanterns at their disposal at any time when everybody else gets one. Can somebody explain what's going on? Well, we know what's going on. They've explained it, and it's stupid, the idea that the Earth is the nexus for all super, you know, for all the bad things in the world. The Earth is the nexus for all of those things. So, in light of that, we need reinforcements at all times.
Exactly.
That's pretty much where they're at. Oh my god, it's so dumb. But yeah, so there's a police space force out there. So there's an intergalactic space force on either side, because Marvel has the Nova Corps, right?
Yeah.
That's an intergalactic space force all of its own.
And in both cases, you have an extraterrestrial body of, you know, of jurisprudence or law enforcement imposing its authority on your planet. You know, what if we as Earth don't recognize the authority of the Green Lantern Corps? I mean, I guess we can just sit around and be destroyed by all kinds of nastiness, and that's what you get. But still, it's like, how dare you?
Right. How dare you come down here and decide what is right and what is wrong on my Earth, pal?
And it's bad enough we've got our own, you know, Earth-born, Earth-powered, or just Earth-skilled, people-skilled vigilantes. But then you haul off and give one of our guys your tech so he can team up Green Arrow, Green Lantern style and just take vigilantism to a whole new level.
Well, sure, of course it is. It's how
what are regular cops to do? I mean, how do you aspire to, you know, maybe make detective one day? When, you know, you're trying to get involved, you're learning the ropes, and all of a sudden Batman comes and just hands you a dossier, and like, oh, I was starting to work on this.
Yeah, you know, all right, I was running down the bank records, and it looks like he might have an offshore bank account, and oh, what's this?
I already got him!
It's like, what is this?
He's on the front steps of the Gotham Police Department.
Okay, where's due process? Where's
the evidence? We don't have just one building, Batman! He's on the front steps! Get him!
Don't need evidence, I'm Batman. No, you still...
Yeah, no. Do you realize that every single arrest you've made from 1930 to the present day has been overturned in court?
We're going to have to talk about that in the next issue. Just what a goddamn revolving door the prison system has
to
be.
If you wonder why nobody can stay in the Raft or the Blackgate Prison, yeah, or, you know, Rikers Island or anything, it's because nobody's been afforded due process, and we are compelled by the law of the land to release them onto the streets.
I feel
it
like...
It becomes that song, you go back, Jack, and do it again.
Oh, are we doing Still Steely Dan now? Are we doing Steely Dan? Have we reached the level of old white that we have to talk about Steely Dan on this show? All right.
Thank you for knowing who the artist was, because like, I only know two bands. One's the Beatles, and the other isn't.
I believe that's Steely Dan. I believe.
I think you may be right. I have no clue, but I think you may be right.
But yeah, it's almost like it has to be a weird psychological game for these superheroes. Like, and the cops have to be just exhausted and disgusted. Because number one, for no good reason, they're constantly targeted. That's all they are, is a target. So if the Penguin wants to make an example and draw the Batman out, the first place he's going is GCPD to capture a bunch of cops.
Yeah.
So they're a target instantly. Number two, they're also just ineffective. Like, okay, we did all this police work. There's no way. We've got this on lockdown. We've got DNA evidence. We know who did this. We got it. And then they turn around, and the Huntress has shot his ass full of crossbow bolts. And you're like, great. Good, then.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Daryl Dixon. That's exactly what we needed.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this. Fucking asshole. You asshole. Like, all I want in the world is to do my job.
But let's also look at real world escalation.
Okay, I'm down. I'm listening.
When I was a child, the idea of body armor, of a cop wearing body armor, was something unique on every fifth episode of SWAT.
Yeah, it was when it got real bad.
Yeah. And nowadays, you wouldn't walk out the door of the precinct without your body armor on.
Right.
What good is body armor against Blastar?
That's true.
You know, if Thanos can snap you out of existence, why even bother to strap on your six guns?
That's true. That is a valid point.
I mean, the police is one of those professions that comes with it, the stock in trade, unfortunately, in any kind of high stress, high danger position, is a tremendous amount of mental illness, and, you know, the kind of mental illness you're not born with.
Right.
The kind that comes from relentless stress and
your PTSDs,
Yeah. You know, then the superhero, supervillain dynamic comes hoving into view. And it's like, how do you combat that? You know, your internal safeguards to help, you know, the places for people to turn that are in law enforcement. You know, you need like to field a whole army of Doc Samsons to talk everybody off the ledge, for God's sake.
Right. A whole army of Doc Samsons is. Yeah, and you never know when one of those people is going to become Harley Quinn.
Which... Exactly. Yeah. Meanwhile, you got somebody showing up trying to say, "Yeah, you know, I'd go for it." You know, you're right. You are worthless. And
I'd go for it.
Your dad was right about you. So
we don't have a lot of time left. I just want to run down as we wrap this one up some of our favorite cop characters.
Because you get like the Harley Quinn types, you're like, you know, you've got a service revolver. I mean, it's not like you have to go out and buy a gun.
This becomes real easy.
No, I mean, you've got one up on the average suicidal Joe.
That's a horrible concept for a comic book character. That is a horrible concept. Suicidal Joe.
He was with the Muggerville 7, briefly.
Yes. Yes, he was. So yeah, just some of your quick hits. Characters who are cops in comics, like who are some of your kind of like go to?
Well, I think one that comes up inevitably is DC's The Guardian.
The shield wielding.
Basically DC's Captain America, whose shield is basically a giant novelty version of a detective's badge.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Not aerodynamic. Like.
No, but yeah, there's no chuck in that thing. It's it's emblematic, but not very useful in certain situations.
Sure.
But it does the number one job that every shield wielder from, you know, the hoplites of ancient Rome to this day demand, and that is it stands between you and things that are being chucked, thrown, or shot at you.
Sure, I agree with that.
So it is hoplite approved. And of course, you know, I invoked Watchmen because the original Night Owl.
Ah, yes. Yeah,
is a police officer who then starts to combat the rise of guys dressing up to rob banks, being the guy who dressed up to cold cock them.
That's true. Also, let us not forget, mentioned often on this show, but maybe never getting his full due, Axe Cop.
Oh!
It's damn Axe Cop's out
probably
there.
Probably the best comic cop ever.
We mentioned earlier Savage Dragon, the cop who punched God once.
Oh, yeah.
He was in there. I like Renee Montoya. We also didn't talk too much about Powers.
Oh, that's right, because police are very much a part of that.
It's basically the main character is police that lost powers and lives in a world where there are powered. So it's a unique take. Also, we haven't talked about Barry Allen at all.
I kind of hinted at Barry Allen a couple of times, yeah. But yes, you know, here you have a police forensics guy who apparently Central City. Yeah, apparently the Central City PD is very lenient about you not exactly being in the lab the time you clock in to the time you clock out.
Ever,
you know.
Like, I was on a case. You've been on a case for 5 months while you were lost in the Speed Force, and you just showed back up and went back to work? All right.
Yeah, I mean, Larry has done your all of your casework.
Yeah, this is comic book world cops. We'll take what we can get, I guess.
You know, Larry over here is now our chief forensic officer, and you are effectively, I mean, I hope you're getting some kind of money out of this JLA gig, because you're not getting any more from me at this city.
That's funny.
And then I think to take the idea of the superhero police to its most simultaneously brilliant and ridiculous extreme, you have to look at Top Ten.
Okay, let's talk about Top Ten.
Alan Moore's seminal police work. And Top Ten posits a world where everybody has superpowers.
Right.
So in a world where everybody has superpowers, you have a normal police force that have superpowers so that everybody else who has superpowers can have normal day jobs or be, you know, the answer is the question, how do you go into a life of crime like knocking over liquor stores? Well, you have, you know, your particular superpower is handy for knocking over liquor stores, and the superpowered cops come and arrest you using similar techniques to those used by non-superpowered cops with non-superpowered criminals.
Right. When you...
Such a wonderful take on the whole idea of, you know, at the point where everybody has some kind of power, you still have to go out and enforce law and do detective work and, you know, bring in drunks to the drunk tank.
You know, do you get, because in a, what is it, in the world of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. In the world of, you know, in the world where everyone is a superhero, you could still get a fine for jaywalking.
Exactly. And what was also kind of fun about that is, in this world that Moore creates, everybody not only has superpowers, but they're all costumed and have code names.
Which is really interesting to me that when, like, you enter, like, that the world, yeah.
The insurance salesman, was it Andy Airbag Soames, who can inflate himself into a giant ball?
Yes. It's a brilliant it is.
And he's wearing his, like, his airbag character costume.
As an insurance, because I guess that's just the world that they want to live in.
Yeah. You know, everybody is the so-called science heroes all – it's like there's no – it literally dilutes the superhero.
Yeah. And it becomes
because it's this oversaturation, so then you return to a strange sense of normalcy.
Yeah, it becomes a fashion choice.
Yeah.
You're not wearing a domino mask to protect your family at that point.
And then at some point you wonder, in the case of some characters, are they even superpowered? Like Armageddon with her giant body armor replete with missiles and bombs and rockets and guns and stuff. And then it takes that yet another step further and has this world interacting with other worlds. And they all have their own police force. So they are in this dimension sequentially that is presumably a tenth in the sequence of however all this came to be.
Yeah.
So they are literally precinct 10 in this realm. And that it adds yet another kind of unique flavor to the narrative. And they go to, like, Grand Central, which is like the prime realm.
Yes.
Where everything is sort of based on classical mythology.
Isn't that the one where they had the gladiatorial, instead of a judicial system, they have gladiatorial combat?
They have gladiatorial combat. And
which we'll have to talk about in the next issue.
Yes, indeed. And it's just a fun read. If you get a chance, it was broken down into a couple of trade paperbacks. And then there was some other stuff that was done later that wasn't, in my opinion, as good. But the original Top Ten storyline is, you know, you've heard me talk before about one issue that made me weep. Mm-hmm. But at its core is this brilliant concept, and it is chock full of wonderful Easter eggs.
Oh, yes.
If you look around, Gene Haw and Xander Cannon did the art. And it is so full of little things going on in the background where you're like, oh, my God, that's the Hair Bears from Hanna-Barbera. And a scene in a hospital where there's, you know, there's an operating theater. And you see these characters that are obviously meant to invoke Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom, Doctor Fate, and Doctor Octopus.
Yes.
And it's like, of course all the doctors would be at the hospital.
I love it. And there's only, okay, so one more, and then we got to get out of here. And then we still have to do the other side of this Law and Order 2-part special, and that is a man that I think crosses the two issues with a flawed perfection, none other than Judge Dredd.
Oh, wow. The only character that crosses over into both issues perfectly is Judge Dredd. And if you're unfamiliar with that, is a deep cut inside joke for myself and Steve, of a guy that we were at Duncanville Bookstore, God, 35 years ago, and just overheard part of a conversation where this guy said, "The only comic I read is Judge Dredd." Like, Hillbilly Hank reads Judge Dredd?
Well, it makes a certain odd sense because it's the perfect culmination of what we're talking about. When you have crazy science crimes in the future, right? Not necessarily superpowers, even though we are introduced to things like psychics and cloning and genetic manipulation and cyborgs.
Cyborgs. God, you and I. A married couple.
We are an old married couple. But when you're introduced to those things, what better way than to take your police force and make them the literal judge, jury, and executioner at the street level, which is what
Yeah.
ju and then show it in a way that isn't at all shown through rose-colored glasses. You want to shed the dirty light of day on what this would look like, what all the things we're looking like would end up being if you let them go to their logical conclusion. Read no further than Judge Dredd,
Absolutely.
because it's violent, crazy, and I'm sure there's no jurisprudence involved in Judge
Well, I
Dredd.
think the legal system of Mecha City is coldly efficient.
Yes. Yes, there's
Because,
no
if you
gray
have a
area.
problem, good luck.
Yeah, no gray area there. None.
Yeah.
But we'll talk more about that next
I mean,
issue.
quite literally, I'd complain, but who'd listen?
Right. You would have to tell the gun to put it into consolation mode.
That's right.
Lawgiver, consolation mode. And then it would just be like, oh, I understand that. I just, explosive mode, boom!
That's right.
All right, well. Why don't you go ahead and what do you have any final thoughts? Anything you want to talk about here before we shut this bad boy up and go to
I want to
Nightwing?
say that, like so often occurs with this show, we begin in one direction and it takes us to places we never imagined. I love that organic sense that we can do that. I often say I've got this plotted well into the the years that seem forever away when I was a kid, like 2020,
Yes.
2021.
Right.
We're like, we've got this thing booked up well into the Adrian Barbobot era.
God, I
And,
hope so. There's nothing I want more in this world.
oh man, I want the strength of 10 gorillas.
I'm a bear with the
But.
strength. I have the strength of a bear that has the strength of two bears.
But even with that, and one of the reasons that something just got bumped into 2021 that was going to air in 2020, we
Oh
can like
no.
suddenly go from a single episode into a story arc or a two-parter, or take what started out as a very ambitious story arc and say, let's just do it, and we can do this in one, and we ought to. And this was one that just begged for what it became.
Yeah.
It was just such an ideological choice to take it in this direction.
Dong dong.
Detective Chimp.
Detective Chip, dog dog.
God damn it, we never even really. Well, Detective Chimp isn't. He's like a private.
He's like a private dick, which is a whole nother issue that we've got to do.
Oh.
I know.
Yeah, like dicking
Oh, put it on the schedule, Cole.
around. There's my pen.
I like to imagine you have this giant scroll of
Yeah,
Hammurabi that you just keep writing at the bottom. It just keeps getting longer.
it's like that was like the ancient lawgiver scrolls from Planet of the Apes. It just looks like a giant cat hair roller.
Yes. Oh my God! All right, all right. We gotta get out of here. We got another. We got another issue to record tonight. If you want to look behind so behind the green door. I've seen that movie. Not what I was trying to say, but
yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna thank you for joining us here at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. If you are joining us from elsewhere. Home of Hey Kids Comics and occasionally the Rancor Pit. And one of these years I'll start writing again.
Yeah, you should.
Feature articles and stuff. And if you want to see some more of my crazy antics and my face for radio, be sure and check out the Rancor Pit Live on DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month. And that is from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., first and third Sundays of every month, Central Time, by the way, since we're here and coming to you live out of beautiful downtown Dallas, Texas. And on the third Sundays of every month, you can also check out Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, in case you're having trouble finding it by spelling. And that is on the third Sundays of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., right before the Rancor Pit Live, where I talk about all manner of toys, toy lines, toy collecting, all aspects of toys, depending on whatever strikes my fancy, whatever I'd like to explore, and whoever I can find to join me on the show. As you're listening to this, probably went out live, but you can find it on the Isle of Toys Facebook page. You can find the archive there for several weeks at DallasOnAir.com as well. I will have an incredible guest, and we're going to be talking about a couple of pioneers in some of the most obscure toy lines you probably never heard of, but these were maverick toy designers and toy creators who were part of some really crazy lines that you'll probably become fascinated with and try to track down on eBay, and will probably just wreck their value because suddenly everybody will want them.
I'm still super into this idea, by the way, because I, as a rabid, avid toy collector, I see these lines all the time, and I just want to know the stories behind what's going on there and how they get made and who collects them. And
my guest, Jesse, is insanely knowledgeable, and one of the most fascinating things about the show that I'm anxious to talk about is how NASA ruined a toy line.
What? I'm into it. All right. You hooked me. You hooked me. All right. You can also find us at HK Comics Show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those places. Cole, let's get out of here and put on our robes and our powdered wigs.
Absolutely.
We got another show to record.
We're going to get us some order up in that court.
That's right. So join us next week, or just hit play on the next issue because they should drop together on Hey Kids Comics. We'll see you next time. Say goodnight.
Absolutely. And you will go from this place and be taken to another place.
And from this place to another place. All right. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.